This is episode 39 of the Coffee Break Podcast. Our guest today is Lucas Baselli. He is the head of the ASSA ABLOY's Americas division and has been around the industry for a while in different leadership aspects. Today's conversation has absolutely nothing to do with ASSA ABLOY and the door hardware industry and everything to do with leadership, leadership philosophy, and how to activate positivity inside your culture. This is a very exciting and a very eye-opening conversation with Lucas. You'll definitely want to have your coffee ready for this one as we get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
All right, welcome back. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've already been having some coffee today, so espresso, everything's good to go.
Fantastic.
We're all
so far so good.
All right, so one of the segments that we do on the podcast every week is rapid fire. Five randomly selected questions with random point values that you have no idea what's coming at you. You good? Are you game?
So not the five questions you emailed me?
Not the five questions that you emailed.
Okay.
Those were just to derail you, right? All right, number one. What book are you currently reading, or maybe the last book that you've currently read?
As I mentioned to you, I really like the Founder's Mentality book.
Yep.
I think it really, for us that we're very acquisitive, it's always interesting to see from a founder of a company point of view,
sure,
how to run a business and how they ran a business. So I found that to be very, very interesting one that I recently finished.
The Founder's Mentality. Number two, what is the fastest speed you've ever driven in a car?
I'm not a fast driver.
Really?
Unlike the other Brazilians, I'm a slow driver. I'm more careful. Probably maybe 110, 105.
So. I mean, that's not shabby.
Yeah, for a Honda Civic back in the day, it was not bad.
All right, number three. How many cups of coffee do you typically drink in a day?
Maybe 5 to 6.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Typically straight espresso, varieties?
Either black or straight espresso, nothing, no milk, no sugars, just black.
You're one of the few that come through here that ask for just 2 shots of espresso.
Okay.
So that is intense.
There's always a first.
Yeah. All right, number four, are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning person.
Really? What's your typical morning rise time?
4:30, either before 5, so... wake up early, get an exercise, and go to work. So yeah. I try to start early and then finish early.
Yeah.
So that gives me time with my family and kids at night. I found that the morning is easier for me to control the morning than control the end of the day. So between 4 and 4:30, that's when the clock rings.
You typically stay up late then? Nope. Or you're early to bed?
Early to bed. Probably... I try before 9:30, so between 9 and 9:30, we're to bed, we put the kids to bed,
yep.
And then we're out. And if I'm on the road, I try to not have long dinners, which sure. is my preference, and go to bed early and get a good night's sleep. So I think it's sleep is always a priority for me. I make it very important to get a good night's sleep.
So. Man after my own heart. Early rise, early to bed. All right, last question. If you could instantly be an expert on any subject, what would it be?
Expert in any subject.
Any subject, across the board.
Drinking coffee.
Yeah?
Not making coffee like you guys, but definitely drinking coffee.
Just an expert at drinking coffee. I know there was an intense conversation about blueberries earlier. We won't get into that. All right, cool. That's 5 questions. You passed.
Sure.
Score 734.
Okay, perfect. So, I was going for a 740, but
okay,
next time.
Well, that's not too shabby, not too shabby.
Next podcast.
let's move it on to the next one. All right. So thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. I know this is kind of neat. We've been associated with ASSA ABLOY for a while now and have had the opportunity to sit down and have a lot of conversations with some of the leadership. And I talked to you on the phone a couple of weeks ago and I said, one of the coolest conversations I had, I was sitting next to one of the leaders of the sales team. And I want to know what it's like to lead a team that large and what does that day-to-day look like? And so that's kind of the direction I want to have this conversation is, you know, so we already kind of started with that. Your day starts early. It's a 4:30, 5 o'clock rise time.
Yeah.
What does it typically look like after that? Or are you email driven? Is there a lot of that happening or is it just, you know, straight into office and meetings throughout the day. What is a typical day in the life of Lucas look like?
I think the word typical is not present. So I think it's it varies a lot. As I mentioned to you, there's a lot of travel involved. So very seldom I get to go to the office back to back on a day. So when I'm on the road, it varies from place to place. It can be internal meetings, outside meetings, but usually involve a lot of people. So if I'm at work, I try to knock down things early on, things that it's depends on me, catching up on emails, catching up on phone calls, catching up on some work that I have to do, and then reading, studying some of the numbers, understanding some of internal things that I don't get to do a lot of.
Kind of looking at the metrics and understanding what's going on in the business.
Comparing what things move, you know, is there a trend that I haven't caught lately? Is there things, is there parallels that I can draw between different signals or not? And then as the day goes on, you lose a little bit of your agenda.
Sure.
So it's other people control. So you have a lot of some of the travel, some of the phone calls or video conference that you have to attend. But more and more we'll be pushing for shorter meetings, less PowerPoint, less, and focus more on making decisions, making sure, focus on discussions. So I think it's what we've been trying to do is having smaller meetings with fewer people, but also with more action items and not much of content review. So if we can review the material before the meeting and be better prepared. But I think there's truly not a routine. I think it's very much of very seldom 2 days are alike.
So with that, from a meeting standpoint, because you brought up something that I think is very interesting, fewer meetings with less people, are you seeing... Are the shorter meetings maybe? Are you seeing shorter meetings more frequently, or is it just shorter meetings and fewer meetings altogether? Just having some action out of it.
Fewer meetings and shorter meetings. I think you can. The shorter you make, the more you squeeze the agenda, right? So I think it pushes you to make more actions.
Yeah.
You can do a 2 hour meeting in 1 hour. You can do an hour meeting in half an hour.
Yeah.
But you can, at the same time, you can do a half an hour meeting in 3 hours.
Yeah.
So as much time as you give, people or myself will take that meeting to fill it up. So I think if you squeeze that, you can get more out of it.
So one of the things that we've talked about, not in this podcast format, but just in conversation, what you've talked about, you can kind of focus on three things. So you kind of have three things that you can get done in a day. Is that also kind of carried on to a meeting philosophy as well, where... I mean, because you could walk into, I'm sure, in your size of an organization, but any organization, that your agenda could be 3 pages, not 3 items. But once it gets past a certain number of items on it, it's almost drudgery when you get through them. Is that kind of a similar process?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always, what are you trying to get out of the meeting, right? What are you trying to get out of the call? Is there an objective?
Yeah.
And I think if you prepare before, you can get to that conclusion very quickly. So I think it's more of doing the homework in terms of preparation before
getting those agendas out early on, so people can come prepared to work.
Not on the agenda, but also the content.
Okay.
Right? Is
okay.
there sometimes it's you overviewing content that can be done on a pre-read exercise. So how the preparation is, I think, is as important as the meeting. And I think if you get prepared before, you can come better prepared with questions. You can think about some of those thoughts, because sometimes you need time to think.
Yeah.
And as much as we would like to make decisions, and I think you get to a level that it's very important to make decisions.
Sure.
The worst decision you can make is not make a decision. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you need to think about it. You need to sleep on it. So reading the material a day before or so allows your brain to think about and not make sometimes a quick decision that it needs to be thought out.
It's interesting. I remember, I can't remember if it was a book or a podcast I was listening to, but it's something very, very in line with what you're talking about, how they were running through this issue where they were wasting so much time in the meeting process because they were coming up with a new idea or sharing a new idea that nobody had ever heard of before. And people didn't have the ability to simmer and kind of breathe on it and really understand it well, and then maybe 2 or 3 days later, they would come back and be like, hey, I had this or this or this idea. And they found in their organization, giving that information out several days ahead, that pre-read, now you've everybody kind of comes on the same level prepared. The people that need a little longer time to think about it have the ability to do that.
And you come more prepared with questions, and I think it's both for both.
You know,
the people receiving the message and people delivering the message. So I think it's a win-win, but it takes a discipline. Sometimes we push things to the last minute in terms of preparation, and we all in blame for this because we get packed with all the distractions, and we don't give enough time for people in the meeting to be prepared. So I think the more we do, the better off for both parties. It is.
So you've been in leadership positions in your current role for like the last year and a half, close to 2 years, but you've been in leadership for a while. What are some things that you would say you have done to prepare yourself for that, or some things that you've learned through the process that have been instrumental in how you lead now?
Yeah, I think one thing that I've probably been trying to focus a lot in the past few years is that I think is one attribute that I admire a lot, which I think is consistency.
Okay.
So I think it's I really value the consistencies, and I try to do that to be consistent in during the good and the bad, because sometimes you see different sides of people depending on the situation, depending on the timing of things, and I think a constant leader throughout the different scenarios is something that we all aspire to. That sure. it can keep calm during the tough times, but also provide surety when things are tough, but also not be ecstatic when things are good, but give that that continuity and constant, because I think it's hard for somebody to not know who's showing up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think I think people struggle to see, you know, which character of that person you're gonna find out is the person A gonna show up as in a good mood, in a bad mood? Am I gonna see aggressive A or defensive B? And I think knowing what you're gonna find out is something that a lot of people aspire to, and that's something that I always wanted from a leader.
Yeah,
somebody treat me the right way, somebody that I always knew that no matter what information was going to provide to them, there was always that consistent.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody put it that way before, but that is something, you know, when you talk about people in your life that are that have poured a lot of value into you, that is something that really does stick out. Somebody that has been consistent. Consistently present, or but consistent in attitude is kind of what you're referring to. Or I guess it could be both, but that's consistency. That's a big factor. That's very interesting.
And you said a key word that's very important to me. It's attitude.
Yeah.
And I think it's there's a famous poem by Charles Swindoll. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Says in life, 10% is what happens to us, and 90% are our attitudes towards it.
Yeah.
And it says we are in charge of attitudes. And I think a lot of times we spend a lot of effort, energy on things that we have no control.
Yeah.
And attitude is something that we have 100% control over.
Yeah.
And I think it's and you find in people with the right attitude, the positive attitude, is contagious. And I think is one attribute that myself I always look into people is that positive attitude. And something that I try to live up as well too. It's something that it takes work. After 5 days of snow, it's hard to get that positive attitude to continue on. But sure. You know, how much can you control the weather?
Yeah.
So it's. I think that the things in life that you can control, an attitude is one of them. I think is a key element of leadership and people.
And one of the things we were talking about earlier is having a positive attitude and also talking positively about things going on in your organization, but not ignoring the negative things, because those are things that have to be addressed and brought to the light so that they can be fixed in a positive way, which is very, very important. I like to ask a lot of people this question. Did you expect to find yourself at this point in your life?
No. It was always, I was also not looking that far in the horizon, probably. I always look at one challenge at a time. Instead of having an aspiration of I wanted to be X, Y, and Z, I had a lot of those aspirations when I was a little kid.
Sure.
For growing up, I wanted to be a trash man because I liked to ride the back of the trucks.
Heck yeah.
And then I had some very interesting aspirations. But as I started my professional career, I didn't try to picture myself where I'm going to be in 10 years, where I'm going to be 20 years, but more of was more of what is the next challenge, what I wanted to do next, what I wanted to learn next, who do I want to work for next. So almost looking in batches versus at the long run. And it's even, you know, from a running perspective, is also, you know, how do you take a race? Do you look at the marathon, or do you look at, you know, the first 20 miles, the last six? How do you break that is into training as well? So there's a lot of parallels of running and how I looked in my professional life, but I could never, if you ask me 20 years ago where I'm going to be, I had no idea.
Yeah. How much value have you placed on mentors in your life, people that you've surrounded yourself with that have helped to coach you and correct you, or what, however you want to look at it, but those people that have helped to kind of cultivate your mindset and the way you see things?
I think sometimes you realize later on that those people were truly your mentors and
sure.
inspirers. So some people, looking back, were great influences in my life, mm-hmm. but I didn't know it at the time. But now I truly value what they have done to me, and I try to communicate to them as often as possible to remind how thankful I am for what the time has been. And I think early in my career, I didn't look up that much, but I'll say halfway through there,
yeah.
I saw the value, and there was definitely several people that I would not be here with if it wasn't for them.
I was listening to another podcast, and they had mentioned this, and I thought it would be a really interesting topic for you to talk about as well. Command and control versus influence leadership. Break down your thoughts on that. I would imagine in your career you have been a part of or seen both sides.
Sure.
How do you break that down, and what's your perspective on it?
I think the influence is very, very important, but you can also sometimes command and control by influence. So I think you can blend those two things, but I think it's I want to go as far as command and control, but understanding the details.
Okay.
I think you can influence, and it's a balance, right? I think how can you influence without not being too detached? Because you can fly very high and influence and inspire people, but at the same time you can distance yourself from the day-to-day pains that those people are having,
yeah.
or truly understanding the details of the business or what's going on in the company. So I think from a people's person, from a development's person, definitely the influence. I'm definitely not a micromanager in,
sure.
in terms of I would like those things to do
yeah.
to be done a certain way. I think it's influence, but it's also important to feel connected to the details
yeah.
without commanding.
So influencing based off of practical knowledge of being grounded in what's happening in that current business and industry, but utilizing that to help coach and influence instead of just telling people what to do all the time.
Sure, sure. I think it's important because it's important for people to take risks, and it's important for people to fail. And if you're commanding all the time, people becoming less willing to take risks and be willing to fail. So I think influencing them in terms of taking those risks, failing, it helps a lot. But it also needs to show some accountability that you feel accountable for that failure as well. So they're not there alone.
Sure.
But I find it's not one or the other. It's balancing both.
Coaching.
Yeah.
How are you coaching or influencing the next group of leaders in your business? How much time do you think that's like important to focus on that and to dedicate to that as you're moving forward?
definitely not enough time that I'm spending now. Yeah. So I think it's definitely something that I want to work more. And it's, I think we, all of us, I think it's, as you talk to people, very few people say I spend as much time or that I should be coaching and developing people. I think it's, we try to use as much more of a situational coaching in terms of try to use the moment to walk through and lead it. But I think also we need to make time to have more of a long-time coaching. But also it's a two-way street, right? I think it's not only you want to coach somebody, but somebody wants to be coached.
Sure, yeah.
So I think it's it takes two to tango there. So I think it's somebody might be in the situation, but not being open or doesn't want you to be coached, and it's okay, because I think you can have several different coaches. I think sometimes the word coach can be a little bit overused.
Sure. You know,
but I think there's opportunities for us to coach the momentum, coaching the long times, but not necessarily you need to coach your direct team. You can coach some other people, and not necessarily your direct team needs to use as a coach.
Gotcha. You mentioned it earlier about consistency. Yeah. So that's, I know that'll be one of your answers here, but as you're looking and assessing, you know, the future of your organization, and you're finding additional leaders and people building that team that you've talked about in the past, what are some things that you're looking for those types of people? What are some things that you say, hey, this is something that we want to be a part of the leadership team that we're building, and these are things that we definitely don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah. So I think some of the characteristics we talked earlier, I think the one is be humble.
Yeah.
I think it's very important. I think to be part of a team, to be part of, I think, our culture, we want somebody that wants to help other people, wants to bring up other people. And I think the true leaders are the ones that really build great teams around them and develop people underneath them and are willing to give credit to them and help people raise versus raise themselves.
Sure.
So I think humble is definitely another characteristic. The ones that are focused and achieve this not only executing the strategy but get things done, get points on the board, and definitely the ones that are hungry, that can push the boundary, never satisfy. They continue to be having the curiosity to see what's next. What else can we do? How can we even and grow further? So I always say, you know, be humble, be hungry, and be focused are three things that always looking into people. And those things, it's not something you learn overnight.
Yeah.
It's not something that you might have a few ones, two or the three, and you might develop the other. But I think it's, there's definitely some characteristics that I admire into people.
I based off of your humility in some of these conversations, I think this is probably going to be a difficult conversation or difficult question for you to answer. With all of the things that you've got going on, the company as a whole, the organization, Asa Abloy, is so diverse in a lot of areas. And you're covering all of the Americas. So there, I mean, pick a place, throw a dart on the map, and you could be there and making an impact, right? How do you, Lucas, figure out how to prioritize what to focus on as you're looking at the thousands of things that need attention? Well, these are and you talked about it in the two or three things that you can make a difference in. What is a process that you would go through to kind of dial that down?
It's a rolling model. So it's the two or three places I wanted to spend time, and I was spending time in the beginning of the year is different than the two or three places I'm doing now. But it's also a place not just for me to spend time, but where the team needs to spend time.
Okay.
I think it's that's where we wanted to make sure that people feel supported not only by me, but the entire organization. And we always have our top three places that we need to work on. And we fix, improve those top three places, and we move on. Not everything is going to be running smooth at all times.
Sure.
But and even the ones that are running smooth, there's opportunities. But we always have the top two or three places that need work, but also that what are the top three places that I'll look at it that I need to learn? What are some of the businesses that I need to spend more time that I need to learn, that I need to be more comfortable with, or some of the two, three places that I don't know a lot of the people that gotcha. The employees need to talk to me. So it's there's not a set formula.
Okay.
But I always have a list of the two or three places that I need to spend time.
So places that need to have time spent and places that need your visibility or your attention on.
Yeah. So I think there's the business need.
Yep.
There is the people's needs, and there is the leadership need as well.
Okay.
So I think it's some places need to be fixed. Some places need to be inspired, and some places need to be developed. So I think you have different places in different maturities that it requires different type of activity and spending time with.
And that's just a constant kind of assessment on a daily, weekly basis. Right. All right, this is kind of moved up there.
Yeah, you know, for us, we have around 27 different manufacturing facilities, about close to 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a moving target.
Yep.
But I think the more you're spending time with people, listening, and being out there, it helps you understand their perspective and some of the challenges that people might be facing.
We talked about this a little earlier offline, but I'd be interested in kind of diving into it a little more, even more so based off of a recent conversation I had with some of our customers. Of you get into this email chain, right, and you're communicating by email back and forth. And how are you again, I'm, you know, just, it's kind of a moving target type thing, but the understanding of we need FaceTime, we need to actually be in person or utilize technology in the virtual aspect that we can still be face to face but virtual, and we've moved that off of a text typing chain back and forth. So you have your email chain, then you have your virtual meeting space, and then you have your in person. How do you leverage the technology but also not devalue the in-person face-to-face meeting?
Well, and we were talking,
that's a million-dollar question.
Yeah, yeah. But
how are you processing that?
No, I think that we were talking earlier, I think technology brings the people that are further away closer to you,
mm-hmm.
and brings the people that are closer to you further away.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of those chain emails happen with people sitting a few feet from each other,
sure.
which, you know, technology became a barrier instead of a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for us, we're trying to move more and more into video, because
mm-hmm.
I think even if you're far away, seeing people's reaction can take a lot of out of the communication that on an email is up to interpretation, right?
Yeah.
You interpret what the tone of the message, what the message is. So I think my preference is always for face to face.
Okay.
If I have to err on one side, it's I would err on face to face. And now, 2 weeks ago, I was in Chicago for a coffee, and I flew back. So
yeah.
If it needs, it's okay. So I think it's important the face to face. Nothing beats the face to face.
Yeah.
And then you go, and after that is the video. And after that is, and the last one is the email or text.
Gotcha. So you prioritize it in reverse of what most naturally everybody does.
Yeah.
The interesting thing on that is, because I think it, talking on what you're referring to, even if you are virtual, even an audio conference call, just turning video on completely changes. Oh.
Absolutely. It changes. A conference call, I guarantee 90% of the conference calls, people are multitasking. I think it's...
I'm logged in, but I'm not logged
yes,
in.
Yes. You know, you're logged in, but you have your email or your text, or I think the majority of people are not engaged.
Yeah.
But once you turn the video on, that engagement becomes very, very clear. So you're forcing people to really pay attention. So... And that's why I think if you're not there, the power of video is very important, because you can see the body language as well. Mm-hmm. You know, if something was said, is that person, Yeah. Sometimes wouldn't voice their opinion over the phone because you wouldn't see their body language. But all of a sudden, if they sit back and make a move and say, okay, you would like to say something, because that body language could be interpreted in the video versus the audio.
I can tell you from experience, I'm part of a couple of different peer groups, and there are some that are audio only and then some that are video only, and they will not allow you to join it without being in video. The level of engagement, night and day, because people are there. When someone's talking, other people, you can tell that other people are listening and engaged. They're not distracted. But if they are distracted, then it's something you draw attention to pretty quickly, because, hey, we're here for a purpose. We're here to grow and better ourselves. If this is just, if you're just part-time involved or part-time engaged, then you're not going to get the value out of it.
But also, it goes back to what we talk about, the size of the meeting, right? On a conference call, it's very easy to have 30, 40 people on it, mm-hmm. and no problem. But all of a sudden on the video, do you really want 40 people? Or sure. do we really think, maybe we just have fewer people? So I think the video always pushes you to have a more selective audience, where on the conference call, sometimes it's very easy to include, and emails as well.
Yeah.
So I think emails and conference calls becomes very easy to mass communicate to a lot of people. And as you go to face-to-face and video, it restrains you into have a shorter audience and, I think, more constructive dialogues.
One of the things with leadership that obviously is a buzzword is culture, company culture. And it's important. It's not just a buzzword, but it's important. When you're talking about culture, because I had a conversation with Scott Baker about culture. It was very informative. And one of the things he was talking about was culture kind of exists, and then you help to drive it. Because I kept asking the question, "How do you change culture? How do you change culture?" He's like, "Well, it's already there. It's how you apply it." What are your thoughts on culture as far as how you're highlighting the good and the bad, and kind of your perspective on that?
Well, Scott is a very knowledgeable person about culture. He probably developed one of the best cultures in a subgroup that we have. But I think it's culture is something that you gotta live by actions, right? You gotta walk the walk. I think especially as you get in senior leaderships, people are watching you mm-hmm. all day long. Mm. So everything that you do, I always think somebody's watching me. Mm. And first is, you don't have to do things because people are watching you.
Yeah.
You don't have to do things just for the purpose to show people. You got to do the things because they're the right things in the right culture you have. So I think it's the culture by assuring, but also the culture by reminding people and being very mindful of what people do.
Yeah.
I think it's if you want to celebrate the wins, if you want to making sure people recognize for going the extra mile, what are you doing to do that?
Yeah.
I think in my case, I read the field sales reports every month.
Okay.
It's a pretty heavy stack where they send comments of what's going well and what's not going well, but also who went the extra mile for the customer. And I write a handwritten note and I give a coffee gift certificate to them to say thank you
sure.
for leaving our culture and going the extra mile. But one point that I think is very important of the culture is not only what you reinforce, but what do you allow?
Yeah.
Happen. So I think it's as valuable of the things you do to promote the values and the culture of your business is what do you allow that take place in the business? What are the things that maybe you pretend you didn't listen,
yeah.
or you didn't hear, or you look away, or you just said I won't. Yeah, this time will go by. Those little things. Are toxic to the culture.
Yeah.
And I think if you let those things happen, and it can be very detrimental to your culture. So I think the things that you do not do can be as meaningful to the culture as the things that you do.
That's a pretty powerful little sentence right there. The things that you do not do are as effective as the things that you do. Is pretty wild, especially when you're at any size business, if it's five people or if it's 500 or 5,000, that is a consistent across the board. And I guess at some point in time, you have to determine at what point you're going to change that, because you get up, you as that company starts growing, as those people start multiplying, the farther you let it go, the harder it is to correct that ship.
And also that supply to everybody, I think it's important, because sometimes people see values and cultures. Is the same values and cultures for everybody, or different levels in the organization? It's like a household, right? Is there your rule for everybody in the house to sit at the table or not use electronics, or just for the kids? You tell your kids to get off the phone, but then are the parents just on the phone all the time? Is the same thing applies to the company? You can say our values, our cultures are X and Y and Z. Does that apply to everybody, or just a subsection?
Are these the exemptions of that? They're exempt from these guidelines or this culture or these core values.
And that's what I say is not a culture.
Yeah.
Because if you start accepting exceptions, then it's not a true culture, right? If you say the culture values of your home is that we're not going to use electronics at the dining table.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden I take a phone call from work, what is that saying?
Sure.
So I think it's you cannot have exceptions on that culture if you really want to drive that culture.
To take that another level, there's a lot of things processing in my head right now, but is allowing that exception also highlighting a value?
Yeah.
You know, if the exception is, hey, oh, we don't, for your example, we don't do electronics at the table, but I'm going to take this business call. Well, your value is business or work, or I mean, that's you've set that example without setting that example, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, or you know, why somebody at a company cannot do X, Y, and Z, but the manager can.
Yeah.
And you know, or we tolerate higher levels in the company to do things and lower.
I think one of the biggest ones is you tolerate or you allow allow exemptions from that based off of maybe what the revenue that they generate or what other kind of sub things that they bring to the company. Well, but they do this well, so we let this slide.
Anytime you use the word "but,"
yeah,
then it's I think it's a pretty downhill to describe the culture.
And yeah,
I think it's. If you're trying to justify someone's behavior using the "but," I think it's not good.
Wow, that's something to simmer on right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's interesting. I don't know where to go from there. That's solid.
Yeah.
When you're talking about leadership, you're talking about culture. That's a solid rule. That's a solid guideline.
Yeah. But I think that's, and you sometimes you have to make the tough decision.
Yeah.
But those tough decisions in the long term, I think are going to be the right decisions. Because I think it's, you know, if people are joining the company or staying the company because they're buying the dream, they're buying the values, they enjoy being part of that. And I think if they see people making the tough decisions for the sake of the organization, of the business, even though it might be a short-term penalty or the business might suffer short-term with that, I think people would, I think that's, at least for me, would be something I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
Wow, you know,
it's really that important.
It's really that important, yeah.
That's interesting. I think you've just unloaded over the past 30 minutes or so a solid amount of information that if anybody went back and listened to just chunks of that in 4 or 5 minute segments, they're all very valid points that can stand on their own. So that's very, very, very valuable.
It's not rocket science.
The humble. There you go. Lucas, thank you very much for sitting down and chatting with us today. I know that the information, it's one of the kind of focus points and the concepts that we try to work off of is that it's not just directly related to our business. Everything that you just talked about is applicable to anybody in any size business in any industry. If they're wanting to set themselves up for growth and development. So that's pretty powerful. And that's what our aim and our goal is here each week when we sit down and have these conversations. So thank you very much for that.
No, thank you. And I think it's, I want to say congratulations to you for what you're doing for our industry, for our business, and also for not only business owners out there, but younger entrepreneurs. And I think younger entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurs inside the enterprise that we try to promote a lot. So thank you for everything that you have done. It's been a pleasure to be here with you in Charlotte.
Yeah, most definitely. If this is your first time watching or listening, hey, we've got a year's worth of episodes every week, 9 a.m. on Tuesdays. We come out with a new episode. And so we ask you to subscribe if you haven't already. You can like our page on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can subscribe on any of the podcast platforms so you get the latest episode every Tuesday when we release that. And it is been awesome to be able to chat with people and learn from people, some of the greatest in business. And it's been really cool. So if you are listening on iTunes, we ask you to give us 5 stars on the ratings, and that'll help get the word out to other people. And we will definitely appreciate it. Thank you very much again for your time, and we will see you next time here on the Coffee Break Podcast.
To learn more about the topics discussed today and to connect with us online to hear all of the episodes available, visit lockdoc.net/podcast.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. Time for a coffee break. Oh, yeah.
The Coffee Break Podcast is brought to you by LockDoc Security. We'd love to connect with you online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Just search LOCDOCINC.